Welcome to Learning English from the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver. Our 30-minute program is designed for people learning English. We speak slowly, using a simple style and limited vocabulary. Today on the show, we have stories from Brian Lynn, Jonathan Evans, and me. Later, Jill Robbins brings us Ask a Teacher. But first, here's Jonathan Evans.
The killing of Iran's General Qasem Soleimani in a United States airstrike marks a major increase in tension between the two countries. Many fear the incident could lead to war and instability in the Middle East. Soleimani was head of Iran's Quds Force, which has military operations in several countries in the region. The Quds Force is recognized by the U.S. as an organization that provides support to terrorism. Some considered Soleimani the second most powerful person in Iran behind Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. Soleimani was killed along with several others Thursday near the Baghdad airport in Iraq. U.S. military officials said President Donald Trump ordered the strike to protect Americans. In a statement, officials noted, General Soleimani was actively developing plans to attack American diplomats and service members in Iraq and throughout the region. In Iran, thousands of people marched in Tehran and other cities to protest the killings. Supreme Leader Khamenei declared 3 days of national mourning for the general. He said, "Severe revenge awaits the criminals behind the strike." The U.S. Embassy in Baghdad urged American citizens on Friday to leave Iraq immediately. It said the embassy is closed and U.S. citizens should not approach the embassy. The embassy was attacked by militia groups supported by Iran and other protesters earlier this week. Iraqi Prime Minister Adel Abdelmahdi condemned the killings as a violation of the conditions of the U.S. military presence in Iraq. He said, "The act of aggression violated Iraq's sovereignty and would lead to war." Russia's foreign ministry said that Soleimani's killing will lead to a rise in tension in the whole region. And China urged all the relevant parties, especially the U.S., to exercise restraint and prevent the escalation of the tensions. The United States has about 5,000 troops in Iraq to train Iraqi forces and to fight Islamic State militants. Another 55,000 are positioned across the Middle East. All of them could be possible targets for Iran. Over the last 20 years, Iran has supported a network of fighting forces and militias in several countries, including Iraq, Syria, Yemen, and Lebanon. These forces could present a threat to the stability in the region. Tensions between the U.S. and Iran have increased since President Trump's decision in 2018 to withdraw the U.S. from Iran's nuclear deal with world powers. Last year, Iran shot down a pilotless U.S. military spy airplane, seized several oil tankers, and interfered with international ship traffic in the Strait of Hormuz. The U.S. also blames Iran for a September attack on a large Saudi Arabian oil processing center. On Tuesday, a large group of protesters, angry over U.S. airstrikes targeting an Iranian-supported militia, attacked the outer edge of the U.S. embassy in Baghdad. The attack led Trump to order another 750 U.S. troops to the Middle East. The embassy attack followed U.S. airstrikes Sunday that killed 25 Kataib Hezbollah fighters. The militia, with ties to Iran, operates in Iraq and Syria. The U.S. said the strikes were in reaction to the killing of an American contractor in a rocket attack last week. Just hours before the news of Soleimani's death on Thursday, U.S. Defense Secretary Mark Esper warned the game has changed. I'm Jonathan Evans.
Indonesia's Air Force has seeded clouds with salt in an effort to stop rain from falling on the flooded capital, Jakarta. The seeding operation follows deadly flash floods and landslides that hit the capital after some of the heaviest rain ever recorded. Indonesian officials said that as of Friday, at least 43 people had been killed in the disaster. Tens of thousands of people have been displaced. Cloud seeding is a process that involves shooting salt into clouds in an attempt to create artificial rain. It is often used in Indonesia to help put out forest fires. The current operation aims to get the clouds to drop water and break up before they reach Jakarta. Indonesia's Air Force teamed up with the country's technology agency to carry out three rounds of cloud seeding on Friday. Officials said more cloud seeding would take place as needed. The latest flooding followed heavy rainfall on December 31st and into the early hours of New Year's Day. The water covered large areas of Jakarta and nearby towns. The area is home to about 30 million people. The start of 2020 weather was one of the most extreme rainfall events since record-keeping began in 1866, Indonesia's weather agency said Friday. The officials said climate change had increased the risk of extreme weather. They warned that heavy rainfall could reach a high point in mid-January and should be expected to last until mid-February. News videos showed floodwaters spreading across Jakarta. Images showed groups of people walking through water and mud-covered cars, some of them sitting on top of each other. President Joko Widodo blamed delays in flood control projects for the disaster. Among the projects is the building of a canal that has been delayed since 2017 because of property right issues. In 2007, more than 50 people died in one of the capital's deadliest flood disasters. In 2015, floodwaters covered much of the city center after canals overflowed. Jakarta has been slowly sinking. A main cause is the amount of groundwater being drawn out from under the city. Rising sea levels have made the threat of flooding even worse. Last year, Widodo announced he would move Indonesia's capital to East Kalimantan Province on Borneo Island to reduce the burden on overpopulated Jakarta. I'm Brian Lynn.
Laureen Scafaria, Melina Matsoukas, and Greta Gerwig led Hollywood to a record year for women in film directing. In 2019, women directed more of the most popular movies than in any year before. Women directed 12 of the top 100 most profitable films in 2019. That is the finding of a study released Thursday by USC Annenberg Inclusion Initiative. That percentage of female filmmakers, 10.6, is greater than researchers have recorded before. It suggests change is finally coming to a film industry where inequality in directing has remained common. The past high in USC's yearly study was 8% in 2008. In 2018, only 4.5% of the year's top films were directed by women. This is the first time we have seen a shift in hiring practices for female film directors in 13 years, said Stacey L. Smith, a writer of the study. She noted that Universal Pictures alone had 5 films with women directors in the top 100 movies. The success of several of these films had already made 2019 a historic one for women. Wong's The Farewell is one of the year's most popular independent releases. Scafaria's Hustlers sold more than $100 million worth of tickets. Also on the list was Matsoukas' Queen and Slim and Gerwig's Little Women. Frozen 2, with $1.2 billion in worldwide ticket sales, is close to setting a new box office record for a movie directed by a woman. Jennifer Lee, who co-directed, set the record with the first Frozen film. Other notable films included Cassie Lemon's Harriet, Tina Gordon's Little, and Jill Colton's Abominable. USC researchers singled out Universal Pictures, where women directed 26% of the studio's films last year. Universal's chief, Donna Langley, is the only woman to lead a major movie studio. Paramount Pictures, in contrast, has not released a female-directed movie in the last 5 years. Films from the streaming company Netflix largely bypass theaters, so they remain outside the study's limits. However, women directed 20% of Netflix's 2019 movies. The Center for the Study of Women in Television and Film at San Diego State University released a separate study Thursday. It examined women in the top films as not just directors, but writers, producers, executive producers, editors, and cinematographers. Women accounted for 20% of all such work in 2019's top films, up from 16% the year before. Study author Martha Lawson suggested there is still room for improvement. She said in a statement, "While the numbers moved in a positive direction this year, men continue to outnumber women 4-1 in important non-acting positions." Also of note, female filmmakers have been largely ignored in this awards season. The Hollywood Foreign Press Association's Golden Globe Awards this Sunday are an example. No women are among the nominees for Best Director. No films directed by women are among nominees for Best Picture either. Rebecca Goldman is the Chief Operating Officer of the anti-discrimination group Time's Up. She said the lack of women nominees is unacceptable. This year, there have been twice as many women-led features than ever, with more films by female directors on the way, Goldman said. Women, and especially women of color, continue to be pushed to the sidelines by a system that holds women back, on screen and off.
VOA Learning English fans, write to us with this question. How do I improve my English? Dear VOA fan, you are in the right place to improve your English. Over the next few weeks, Ask a Teacher will tell you how to use our website to get better at speaking English and improve your listening skills. The first step in getting better in English is to study at the same time each day. Some of our readers tell us they listen to Learning English broadcast on their way to school or work. Do you wake up early and study when the house is quiet? Or do you like to stay up late and study before you go to sleep? Choose a time to study English every day or every week. Make a study plan for each week. Here's an example using our website. On Monday, watch Let's Learn English. Practice the conversation with a friend. On Tuesday, watch English in a Minute. Teach the new expression to family or friends. On Wednesday, watch English at the movies. Write a note to a friend about the expression. On Thursday, watch news words. Write a sentence using the word. On Friday, read or listen to Ask a Teacher or Everyday Grammar. Write 3 sentences. A good way to learn is to study with a friend or family member. You can study together in person or on the phone. Some families speak English only at dinner time or watch English videos together. One of the most important steps to learn English is to set a goal. Make it something you know you can do in a short time. Here are some examples. I will learn 4 new idioms in the next month and use them with friends. I will practice speaking with my friends 3 times a week. I will write sentences with 5 new English words every week. Start with these steps as we begin the new year. Study at the same time, study with a friend, and set a goal. Come back to read more about how to improve your English in the coming weeks. And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Jill Robbins.
Now it's time for our program, American Stories. Today, we hear the second and final part of The Law of Life by Jack London.
Kosh-Kush placed another stick on the fire and let his thoughts travel deeper into the past. There was the time of the Great Famine. He had lost his mother in that famine. In the summer, the usual plentiful catch of fish had failed, and the tribe looked forward to the winter and the coming of the caribou. Then the winter came, but with it there were no caribou. Never had the like been known, not even in the lives of the old men. The rabbits had not produced any young, and the dogs were skin and bone. And through the long darkness the children wept and died. So did the women and the old men. Not one in ten lived to meet the sun when it returned in the spring. That was a famine. But he had seen times of plenty, too, when the meat spoiled before it could be eaten. Even the dogs grew fat and were worth nothing from eating too much. In these times they let the animals and birds go unkilled, and the tents were filled with newly born children. Then it was that the men remembered old quarrels and crossed to the south and to the west to kill ancient enemies. He remembered when a boy, during a time of plenty, when he saw a moose pulled down by the wolves. Zingha lay with him in the snow and watched. Zingha was his friend, who later became the best of hunters. One day he fell through an air hole in the frozen Yukon River. They found him, a month later, frozen to the ice where he had attempted to climb out. Zingha and he had gone out that day to play at hunting in the manner of their fathers. Near a creek they discovered the fresh track of a moose, and with it the tracks of many wolves.
"An old one," Zingha said. "It is an old one who cannot travel as fast as the others. The wolves have separated him from his brothers, and they will never leave him."
And it was so. It was their way. By day and by night, never resting, biting at his heels, they would stay with him to the end. How Zingha and he had felt the desire to see blood! The finish would be a sight to remember. Eagerly they started up the trail. Even he, Kaskush, who was not a good tracker, could have followed it blind, it was so wide. They were not far behind the hunt, reading its awful story at every step. Now they saw where the moose had stopped to face his attackers. On every side the snow had been stamped heavily. In the middle, there were the deep footprints of the moose. All about, everywhere, were the lighter footmarks of the wolves. Some had moved to one side and rested while their brothers tried to seize the moose. The full-stretched impressions of their bodies in the snow were as perfect as though they'd been made a moment before. One wolf had been caught in a wild dash at the moose and had died under its heavy stamping. A few bones remained as witness. The two boys stopped again at a second stand. Here the great animal had fought with despair. As the snow indicated, he had been dragged down twice, and twice he shook off his enemies and gained his footing once more. He had finished his task long before, but nevertheless, life was dear to him. Zingha said it was a strange thing for a moose once down to struggle free again, but this one certainly had done so. The medicine man would see signs and wonders in this when they told him. Then they came to the place where the moose had tried to climb the river bank and go into the woods. But his enemies had attacked from behind, until he leaped high and then fell back upon them, crushing too deep into the snow. It was clear that the kill was near because the two dead wolves had been left untouched by their brothers. The trail was red with blood now, and the distance between the tracks of the great beast had become shorter and shorter. Then they heard the first sounds of the battle, the quick bark of the wolves which spoke of teeth-tearing flesh. On hands and knees, Zingha and Kaskush made their way through the snow. Together they pushed aside the low branches of a young pine tree, and looked forth. It was the end that they saw. The picture, like all of youth's memories, was still strong with him. His eyes now watched the end acted again as clearly as in that earlier time. Koshkush was surprised at this, because in the days which followed he had done many great deeds. He had been the leader of men, and his name had become a curse in the mouths of his enemies. For a long time he recalled the days of his youth, until the fire grew cold and the frost bit deeper. He placed two sticks on the fire this time. Then he figured how much life was left by the amount of wood that remained in the pile. If Sitkamha had remembered her grandfather and gathered a larger armful, his hours would have been longer. It would have been easy, but she was always a selfish child. She had not honored her ancestors from the time the beaver, son of Zingha, first looked at her. Ah, well, what did it matter? Had he not done the same in his own quick youth? For a while he listened to the silent forest. Perhaps the heart of his son might soften. Then he would return with the dogs to take his old father with the tribe to where the caribou ran thick and the fat hung heavy upon them. He strained his ears. There was not a sound to be heard. Nothing. He alone took breath in the middle of the great stillness. It was very lonely. Wait. What was that? His body suddenly felt cold. A familiar cry broke the silent air, and it was close to him. Then his darkened eyes again saw the old moose, the bloody sides, the torn legs, and the great branching horns fighting to the last. He saw the flashing forms of gray, the bright eyes, the dripping tongues and the sharp teeth. And he saw the circle move closer until it became a dark point in the middle of the stamped snow. A cold nose pushed against his face, and at its touch his soul leaped back to the present. His hand shot into the fire and dragged out a burning stick. Overcome for the moment by his fear of man, the beast drew back, raising a call to his brothers. Greedily they answered, until a ring of gray was stretched around him. The old man listened to the steady breathing of this circle. He waved his flaming stick wildly, but the beasts refused to scatter. Now one moved slowly forward, dragging his legs behind. Now a second, now a third. But now, not one moved back from his flaming stick. Why should he so desire life, he asked, and dropped the burning stick into the snow. It made a slight noise, and then there was no more fire. The circle murmured uncertainly, but held its place. Again he saw the last stand of the old moose, and Koshkush dropped his head hopelessly on his knees. What did it matter? Was it not the law of life?
That's our show for today. But we'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. For VOA Learning English, I'm Katie Weaver. Thanks for listening.